Hello from London. My name is Ezra Aydin and I work for Volkswagen Group Cultural Engagement. Today I am at the Victoria and Albert Museum, where I'll be meeting Mariana Pestana and Rory Hyde, the two curators of the exhibition The Future Starts Here, a show that presents more than 100 objects shaping the world of tomorrow. Let's learn more about it and also about the curators and their work. Hello, Mariana. Hello, Rory.
Hi, Ezra.
So who wants to start, Mariana?
Sure. My name is Mariana Pestana. I'm Portuguese. I live in London and work in London for 10 years now. My background is in architecture, and I'm an independent curator. So I joined the V&A 3 years ago to work on this project. That's when I started. It feels like a long time ago now, but it's taken us this long to get here. So I've, parallel to this work as a curator, I co-run a practice with three other people called The Decorators, and we test possible futures. We make temporary spaces that enact possibilities so that people can experience them and see what they can be like. So I have this double hat on, a practitioner and also a curator working with different institutions.
Very well. Rory, how about you?
Yeah, so I've been at the V&A for 5 years now. Before that, I was working in Amsterdam, and before that, I studied architecture also, like Mariana, in Australia. So I've been in Europe for also 10 years, and at my regular job, if you like, at the V&A, although it seems, because I've been working on this for 3 years, and I was 2 years in my regular job, this feels like my job. But the other job is curator of contemporary architecture and urbanism.
Can you tell us a little bit more about this department here in the V&A?
Yeah, so we're both part of the Department for Design, Architecture and Digital. It's a fairly new department. We were set up about 3 years ago. And really, this is the first major exhibition to come out of the department. The other activities of the department are making acquisitions, so collecting. We're doing gallery projects currently, so we're rehanging the 20th century collection. And I guess one of the most visible outputs of our department is the rapid response collecting component. So that's a collecting strand that for the museum, and it has a dedicated gallery where we're looking at objects which have a social or political relevance. And we try to get them into the gallery and on display extremely quickly. And really, The Future Starts Here owes a lot to that kind of thinking of using contemporary objects, contemporary design to make sense of the world, to look around and to work out what does it mean for the way we live today.
How would you describe your everyday job life? What do you do as a curator? How's your
emails,
daily life?
There's a lot of emails, more than you would expect. But of course, the most exciting part of the job is when you get out and meet the designers, the practitioners, the engineers in this case, and the scientists who are working in this fascinating project. So we got a chance to travel a little bit and visit some of these studios and really understand what the thinking is behind all of these projects. That's when it gets really, really exciting. So that would be perhaps not very representative, I would say, of the normality of our everyday, but definitely the most exciting.
And is there a special moment that you will remember while preparing this exhibition?
Yeah, it's a good question. To pick up on Mariana's point about trips and about meeting people, last year I went to University of Berkeley, of California in Berkeley rather, and had lunch with this incredible guy called Stuart Russell, who is the kind of godfather of artificial intelligence. So he wrote the definitive textbook. He ran this very famous open course for Stanford University, which had 100,000 people subscribe to it. So he's the sort of one of the really big brains whose project is in the exhibition. And it was just such a lovely lunch, except we were discussing, you know, the possibility of an artificial general intelligence. So that's an AI that has the capacity of equal to a human. We were discussing the intelligence explosion. So what happens if that AI is learning itself and it continues to learn at an exponential rate, that it could quite quickly become far superior to any of us humans, and what that might mean? Does it mean we've let some project, you know, some, you know, rogue element out of the box? And it was just one of those very bizarre moments where you're, you know, meeting somebody who's knows so much, has also can see so far ahead in terms of over the horizon. He may not necessarily see a positive future. He was quite afraid of how these things might be used. And for instance, he drafted an open letter for security around artificial intelligence, but also such a generous and lovely man. And I think that was, the for me, this strange combination of, you know, terrifying futures versus the generosity of the people who are building these futures. And that's, I feel like it got captured in the show. There's these two sides of the same coin, intrigue, excitement, potential threat, but also the real generosity and you know, good intentions that these, that all of our creators have.
This sounds like a very interesting encounter. So what did you learn out of this exhibition or during your preparation?
Yeah, it's been very humbling, actually, to be in contact with these extremely intelligent people, often those that dedicated their lives to making a better world, right? And to be in contact with them and to learn from them about their motivations and so on has been really, really revealing in a way. I was just remembering another fun encounter was with an extraordinary man who's Antanas Mockus, was mayor of Bogota, and he was mayor for 8 years, so 4 years times two. And in the exhibition, we have his super citizen suit. This is a suit that he used to wear. It's like a Superman suit with an emblazoned C. And it stands for his values, or the values he promoted, of getting people to self-organize, of to using humor as a way to regulate things like traffic and reduce the crime rate. And he's an extraordinary figure. And after a lot of effort, like, we couldn't get in touch with him. Our contacts weren't working. And eventually we found him. And we found someone who works with him, and we told them, well, we are at the V&A and we really want to show this suit. And they went, oh, but Antanas Mockus is going to Oxford tomorrow. We're going to take the suit to the plane. So they drove to the airport with the suit, which he brought with himself in a plastic bag, and which he valued at £0, which was really cute. So this has been very humbling, right? Like, these people, I mean, here's someone who really worked so hard and overcame his own profession. He was an academic before, then he became a mayor, and he was so creative all throughout his life. And then when we ask him to have something that is of personal value to him and so on, he's just like, doesn't even hesitate, gives it to us like that. It's been extraordinary.
Mm-hmm. So the V&A is a very international museum with lots of projects around the globe. Would you say that, and you also represent many designers, artists, inventors from around the world, would you say the future has an international language or an identity which is automatically international? Or can you tell us about some differences, cultural or national differences?
Yeah. It's a good question. I mean, certainly we would say there's a you know, concentration at this point in time of technology and of innovation that comes out of North America, in particular, the West Coast of Silicon Valley, the big universities there, the big universities here in Europe and in the UK. But we've also tried to challenge our assumptions about where ideas come from throughout the research that we've been putting into the exhibition. So we came across some fantastic new ideas. For instance, coming out of Nigeria, there's a group called Ushahidi. They've developed a a product which is a Wi-Fi router with a hard disk that's extremely rugged. It's called the Brick, and it's used for teaching classes on the internet. So in a place where power supply may be very patchy, internet connectivity may be very patchy, this thing can suck down a whole lot of data. It's got a battery for it, and you can teach a class with kids using this technology. So, and that's something which is developed out of those particular constraints and particular context, but it's a sort of tool that we would never come up with here because of all of our privileges and the infrastructure that we have in the West. So we're looking for those sorts of counter projects which suggest a different way of thinking that comes out of different parts of the world. And we, for instance, another example, just quickly, is we have a whole range of objects related to the Indian Space Research Organization, so ISRO, which is basically Indian NASA. And they've made this fantastic, they sent a probe to Mars. And there's this great line that we encountered in researching this project, which is they sent a real satellite to Mars. It's orbiting there now. It's taking photos, sending them back to Earth for less than it costs Hollywood to make the film Gravity. So again, it puts in perspective, and far cheaper than what it costs NASA to send anything to Mars. And this is what's called, Jugaad innovation. So loosely translates as kind of quick and dirty, we can do it attitude that comes out of those parts of the world, which is different from the very technocratic way of thinking in North America and in the West. So we've got a model of that satellite. We've got a test camera. We've got rupee notes with the satellite on the money, and a fantastic documentary which Superflux made for us, or rather it's their film, interviewing people on the streets of Ahmedabad, where the ISRO headquarters is, about what that mission meant to them and mm-hmm. how what kind of impact has it had on the ground in India. So again, in a way, bringing space back down to Earth, grounding it with the actual people who it's intended to influence.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think will be the most favorite objects in the exhibition?
Ooh, we've got this great difficult car. No, but seriously, I think that I'll let Mariana jump in as well, but I think we've got a handful of things which people can interact with, and one of those is the car. And I think to be able to jump inside that Cedric and to imagine that future of having a robot shuttle you around town is going to be really one of the things that people will be hugely excited about. And we have a bunch of other interactive exhibits, which I think will also steal the show.
Yeah, it will be a surprise, I think, for many visitors to experience these objects for the first time, because they might have read about them. There's a lot of technology news at the moment and series and so on. So people will have heard about these objects, or many of them, or read about them, but it's a completely different thing to be in front of them or inside them and to experience them. So we're hoping that this this exhibition will provide that experience for the first time for many people.
So what we can see in the exhibition is that many things are also connected with each other. So there's not one thing changing or developing without having an impact on others. What do you think will your work look like in, let's say, 10 years?
Good question. The show is called The Future Starts Here. So what we're interested in are the beginnings, and that's really what we've assembled here. These are all seeds. They might lead to other consequences. So we open the show with this fantastic quote from Paul Virilio, which is that the invention of the ship was also the invention of the shipwreck. So inside each of these ideas contain good futures and bad futures, and we're not sure which they will be, and even the creators aren't sure which will eventuate. But having said that, well, good question. Looking back from 5 years, 10 years, I mean, many future shows can date because they make predictions. And often predictions are wrong. So what we're not doing is making any predictions. And I think hopefully that will mean that it stands the test of time a bit better, because it doesn't make us look so silly. But instead we're presenting many possible futures, so mm-hmm. many ideas And yeah, we're not making any bets on which ones will eventuate, but we hope that some of them will, and will look very prescient for having predicted them.
But also the show is guided by questions, right? Mm-hmm. And so we want to invite visitors to interrogate these objects and the technologies behind them. So technologies like genetic manipulation, genetic editing, or DNA as a new design material. I think we will look back and we will recognize that that was a very important technology of our time. The same could be said about artificial intelligence, which is another area that we cover in the home section, where we have robots like Paro and Jibo that are at the forefront.
Cedric.
And Cedric as well, of course. But we're fascinated about these fields of design that are developing today and how they happen at these extreme scales, right? At the scale of the DNA, as I mentioned, at the scale of the atmosphere, the amount of satellites that are now populating the Earth's atmosphere, projects like Aquila, Facebook's aircraft to deliver internet to unconnected areas of the world. These are projects that take up a whole new space, or Made in Space, who made the world's first zero-gravity 3D printer. And we have some of those tools printed with that printer in the exhibition. They're now working on a project called Archinaut, whereby they are testing printing at a much larger scale. So we could imagine a future where factories are actually located in the atmosphere. So I think 10 years from now, we will still recognize that this was a moment of change. It was there was a shift in terms of what constitutes design and what the fields of design, the radical fields of design are.
Mm-hmm. So is there anything you're particularly looking forward to
in the future?
Mm-hmm.
Good question. Well, one of the projects which I wish was invented a few years ago when we had our baby is this robotic cot, which, well, put your baby to sleep. So it's got sensors in it and it will detect screaming and just do this special motion and that's it, put you to sleep. So, that's the kind of thing. It seems superficial, but actually, you know, for parents, those first few years are complete hell. And if technology can solve that, then I think the future is bright for mothers and fathers.
I would say also that there's a number of projects that are grassroots in the exhibition, right? They are initiated from the ground up. And I'm quite interested to see how they will develop. Some of them are very hopeful. So we're at the moment living a democratic crisis, we could say. Opinions were split after the EU referendum here in the UK, after the American election, and certain projects, for example, like the refugee flag, which was a project created by the Refugee Nation, which aims to symbolize the millions of people displaced in the world, is a project that is a symbolic project, but that really, I think, represents an important moment in our time and symbolizes that something has to be done about it. Or, for example, the Rojava parliament that is opened 2 weeks ago in northern Syria, and it is a model of democracy that is alternative to the one we have. It says we believe in democracy, but not in the nation state. So it proposes a completely radical future that is nothing like what we have experienced, but it could be an interesting model to look at.
So you two look optimistic into the future, I guess.
Always.
I think so. The current feeling around the future at the moment seems, it's particularly how it's represented in culture through TV shows such as Black Mirror, or through the news, through, you know, scandals around social media and politics and so on. It would be hard to be, you would be naive to be excited about technology in a wide-eyed mode. But I think that all the research that we've done and all the people that we've met, I still remain optimistic. I think that most of the people here do have great ideas that can make huge transformations, and I'm excited to see them realized, and hopefully they are realized for the right reasons. And I think and to pick up on Mariana's point about new forms of organization or collaboration and involving people, that really can answer a lot of these questions and anxieties. And so I think, you know, big ideas, big new technologies with meaningful engagement from the public, that's a future that I'm excited about. And hopefully that's one that people leave the exhibition feeling is possible. So that's a big narrative for us, is the future is something which you have a role in shaping. The future is not something which is just done to you, but it is up to you. And we all have a way of contributing, and hopefully people will leave the exhibition feeling like they know how they can do that.
I'm with you, Rory. I think that we spend too much time worrying about what we would call these more probable futures, right? These futures that are produced by the usual suspects. And what we're proposing is that we also look at alternative futures, mm-hmm. at what we call the possible futures. So these that are independent, apparently less plausible, but if we get behind them, we can make them thrive. And that's why we start, for example, our democracy section with a historical object from the V&A collection. And this is a scarf that was used to promote the suffragette movement, mm-hmm. and it says "Votes for Women." Mm-hmm. 100 years ago, when that scarf was produced, mm-hmm. the idea of women voting was implausible. Mm-hmm. But today it's the norm. Mm-hmm. So it's there to remind us that the projects that we believe in, we should stand behind them and do something to promote them and to make them thrive and be actualized in the future.
I asked you already what kind of impact the technological developments will have on your work life. So can you tell us what impact the work on the exhibition or what you've learned so far, what kind of influence will that have on your everyday life or on your life in general?
I suppose after engaging with all of these people who are working on the future, either writing about it or making projects, to design a different future. We had, for example, a panel of advisors that includes Arjuna Padurai, who's an anthropologist, Susan Shupley, who's an artist, Daisy Ginsberg, a synthetic biologist. And after being immersed in this world for over 3 years, I suppose I just cannot let it go, right? Mm-hmm. that's the feeling I get, that that somehow there's a certain addiction to mm-hmm. being in contact with those who think ahead of us somehow. Mm-hmm. They are invested. Many of these people have dedicated all of their adult lives to imagine mm-hmm. what the future is like. So I just want to spend more time with them. I can't stop.
So are you planning the next projects already?
Possibly.
I mean, to speak very personally, perhaps, one of the things we realized in researching the show is that feeling you have when you leave your phone at home, and that, which is that mm-hmm. strange combination of anxiety and feeling incomplete or, mm-hmm. or something. You can no longer fully function. And on the one hand, it's revealing. It shows how enmeshed technology is into the way we live and the way we think already. But it's also a terrifying thing, you know. And so for me, I've, two rules. No phones in the bedroom, no screens in the bedroom. That's one of the things that's changed at our house, which is, you know, at least to provide some sort of sacred space away from the constant alerts or information. So just trying to kind of recalibrate and recapture the opposite, you know, to embrace technology on the one hand, but also to create space outside of it, I think has been one of the ways that this project, this research has changed the way I think about this content.
anything you want to ask me? Or us? Or
You saw the show today, Ezra, and you've had a good look around. Tell us your thoughts about the future. Are you hopeful or afraid?
I think I have the very same mixed feelings. I mean, I liked very much the aesthetic. I already told you. I like it that the future is so colorful and playful and accessible. And I also like the feeling of being in a not so perfect world, because that's something what is very often presented when talking about the future. Everything seems to be like very, you know, straightforward, clean.
Mm, like an Apple store.
Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah. And I like it that it's so colorful, that your designers have been, you know, able to experience a bit with materials and also shapes and forms and colors. And and of course, I mean, I don't even know where to start. There's so many great objects. And I think it's one thing what I like, not particularly in this exhibition, but also in other exhibitions that I've been lucky enough to experience at the V&A, is that it's very accessible, that it's made for a broader audience. I think that everybody can take home something, one idea or thought or inspiration. And I like the idea that, you present a lot of possibilities that will enable people to use technology in the way that suits them best. I mean, I don't want to give any examples now, but I think this accessibility is something that I like very much.
Thank you.